KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and online for the world at kpfk.org.
Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles. We present environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Welcome, I am Jack Eight. On today's show, ecological remediation, fungi, and the aftermath of urban fires. Host Carrie Kim will be interviewing Danielle Stevenson, founder and president of the Center for Applied Ecological Remediation, and Maya Elson, guest instructor at UC Santa Cruz, MS student at San Jose State University, and guide with mycopsychology experiences. Dr. Danielle Stevenson is an environmental toxicologist, applied mycologist, and bioremediation innovator with expertise in soil, water, and waste remediation. She has led community, academic, and governmental partnerships to develop accessible soil testing programs and develop and implement nature-based cleanup strategies, including plant fungal remediation models. Currently, she leads research and development on fungal-based plastic degradation while advancing scalable bioremediation solutions for polluted sites. Maya Elson explores the interplay between fire, fungi, and humans. Maya is a co-founder of Radical Mycology and former executive director of Co-Renewal. Maya has led efforts and research on post-fire bioremediation, is the lead investigator of biome logs, and is a consultant for post-fire bioremediation efforts in Hawaii, Greece, and Lebanon.
Aloha, this is Carrie Kim. We are grateful listeners today to have Danielle Stevenson, founder of Center for Applied Ecological Remediation, and Maya Elson, co-founder of Radical Mycology, joining us today to talk about ecological remediation, including phyto and myco remediation for fire resilience, post-fire restoration, and remediating toxic sites so they can once again thrive and benefit life. We thank the Tongva ancestors for their continuing presence, legacy, and relationship to this region. Our show comes to you from the ancestral homelands of the Tongva and all of their relatives. We invite you to join Indigenous-led projects, actions, and causes to ensure the continuance of Indigenous peoples, their homelands, and lifeways for future generations. Volunteer on Indigenous regeneration projects, donate to Indigenous causes, and the Land Back Movement. Reach out to local tribal councils and uplift Indigenous peoples wherever you live. Welcome, Danielle and Maya. We are so grateful to have you both on the show.
So happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Mahalo for the diligent and inspired efforts that you're both engaging and offering to restore our connection to fungi, healing ourselves, and restoring the natural world. You know, ours is a time of great potential, of embracing traditional, indigenous, and natural ways to heal the earth. With every crisis, we can move further in the direction of our ancient future, to live in sacred reciprocity with the ancestors of the lands and nature. There are roughly 500,000 brownfields or industrially contaminated sites in the United States. About 90,000 of them are in California. Our lifestyles, how we build, and the products we consume make urban fires like the recent Palisades and Eaton fires a legacy of toxicity. Heavy metals such as lead, organic contaminants including benzene, formaldehyde, PFAS or forever chemicals, and even radioactive waste can be part of the aftermath of urban fires. pollutant-containing ash settles on soil and can eventually make its way to our waterways, rivers, groundwater, and the ocean. But this is not the end of the story. Perhaps it is the beginning of accelerating the potential of ecological remediation and turning to fungi, native plants, ancestral ways, and natural means to address remediation in place where possible. Rather than pass the buck of toxicity, typically to communities of color, now is the time to uplift ecological remediation and nature's own abilities to restore itself. Fungi and ecological remediation can transform the ecosystem from toxic inheritance to a legacy of health and vitality for all life. Danielle and Mike will give us glimpses into how we can use the present to become the future. Welcome. So, you two, let's start at the beginning. What is ecological remediation?
Sure, I can speak to that. So, ecological remediation is working with nature and, you know, cycles of succession and all the diversity in nature to address pollutants in the environment, but also to regenerate whole systems, whether that's a soil system or a bigger ecosystem. And so we work with fungi for sure, but not just one kind of fungi, but many, many different types of fungi, as well as plants, different types of plants and bacteria and other organisms in a system to, you know, really address all the pollutants present and regenerate the system.
So are you using bioremediation and ecological remediation interchangeably, or is there some difference between the two terms?
That's a great question. So I think bioremediation refers to working with living organisms mm-hmm. to address pollutants in the environment. I've been working with the term ecological remediation to mean that we're not just working with plants or just fungi or just bacteria, right? We're working mm-hmm. to mimic ecologies and okay. draw on ecological principles to, you know, to do the remediation. So I do think that ecological remediation comes from bioremediation, but bioremediation can be really specific, right? It can be like, we just work with plants. We just planted sunflowers and, that's the mm-hmm. approach. Or mm-hmm. even sometimes mycoremediation, where it's like, we mm-hmm. just put in, you know, the oyster mushroom or another charismatic decomposer, and mm-hmm. then we're done, you know? Whereas ecological remediation recognizes that, you know, in nature, we don't really see like a single organism, a single kingdom of life. We see
right.
all these different mm-hmm. kingdoms of life and organisms working together, like each creating food and habitat for mm-hmm. the other, each playing a really important role. And together, you know, like really that's all together and not individually, not alone is how I've seen in my practice, like the best remediation success.
Well, thank you for that, for clarifying between bioremediation. It sounds like ecological remediation is really kind of more broad based the way you're speaking about it.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I don't know, I'm so curious, but I have the set. I think we both actually started with mycoremediation mm-hmm. more specifically, yeah. right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But I was coming from like a more, I think that this speaks to kind of the difference in the terminology too, is like, what is your goal, right? Right. Like bioremediation can just be, you know, another way of mitigating toxins so that you can keep going with business as usual. Whereas when I hear ecological remediation, I'm thinking about like, how can this be a part of healing a whole ecosystem?
Right.
And maybe shifting our relationship with it, ideally, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Something longer term is built in there. Yeah.
Yeah. That was how I got into it, you know, originally was through like micromediation as this, you know, window into like a systemic change.
Makes sense that it would naturally morph and you both are evolving with the work. I wonder if you could, we always kind of have to go back to the beginning and it seems so basic, but so many people still don't know what are fungi. If you could define fungi, I think we always need to bring that up.
Oh, well, I can do this one. So fungi, we take turns here.
Yeah.
So fungi are not plants. They are actually more closely related to animals than they are to plants. But they're different than us in that they don't walk around. They tend to have one spot, which we call a substrate. It's habitat / food source. And from that place, what it does is they typically, not all fungi have mycelium, but most fungi have mycelium, which is the body of the organism. And then when you see a mushroom, that's, you know, its fruiting structure. So that's the sexual reproductive organ where it shoots out spores that get picked up by the wind and hopefully get carried to a place where it can keep the life cycle going.
What's amazing is how many different species. Well, you know, they're fungi and fungi, but they both kind of use different ways.
I'm a fungal. So
yeah, I'd like to share a quote from you, Maya, that was on your site, but I think it's very important for people to receive this. So fungi are everywhere, acting as agents of multidimensional transformation. You don't have to go out into the forest to find fungi. They are in our bodies. Spores are in the air. They are a part of the food we eat. They are so intrinsic to our existence that many don't even notice them. But people all over the world have been co-evolving with fungi for millennia. When we connect with these symbiotic processes consciously and build skill around developing these relationships, including within our own ancestry, we unlock the potential for larger scale, multidimensional transformation on social, cultural, psychological, and ecological levels. Quote from you, Maya, it's a pretty strong one. It's a good one. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
So I wonder if you could share, I think you two are collaborating on a project, right? So I wonder if you could share about this project.
Yeah, so we are collaborating on a project through a newly formed SoCal Post-Fire Remediation Coalition. Yeah, this is really an effort to bring together people and organizations working around bioremediation and post-fire bioremediation to provide support and resources in LA area and Southern California post-fire. So we have Co-Renewal involved. We have my organization, Center for Applied Ecological Remediation. We have Mycelium Matters involved and a number of other amazing partners. And really with this coalition, we're bringing together folks with energy, experience, you know, different things to contribute towards this effort. So Co-Renewal has led some amazing post-fire micro-remediation efforts that I'll let Maya speak to a little more. And then from that, and I'll let Maya go into this, but there's been some like evolution of some amazing different techniques there. And so this coalition, we're really working with mycowattles that have been developed by Co-Renewal to address mostly erosion issues, you know, post-fire.
Right.
And we're working with some of the methods I've developed around ecological remediation to address contaminants in the soil. And then Maya can speak to the biome logs as another facet of this, like integrated approach to address post-fire contamination and build regeneration in Southern California here.
Maybe if you could go back to, because Maya, I know some people may not even know what a wattle is. Some people will, but no, if you could explain mycowattles and what is the function of those and maybe go back into the biome logs from there.
Absolutely. I also want to let folks know that we just launched a new website, which is socalbioremediation.org. So a lot of this information is there. Just want to, and there you can see what a wattle looks like there if you need a visual. So often, you know, when there's an erosion risk, it's a really common technique to lay these like straw tubes that look like, you know, giant sausages. You'll see them by the roads. You'll see them in places, you know, where they just, you know, clear cut sometimes and there's that erosion risk. So this is, you know, a really effective method for preventing sediment from moving down, and it creates a little berm so that, you know, there's something to stop the sediment that as it moves. And they're typically built with burlap on the outside and straw on the inside. Ours are a little bit more, we get a little more fancy with them, and we try out different substrates. We tried out different sock materials. I really like the wood fiber one, all organic. And so what these naturally do is they create a habitat for native microbes to come and do what they do. So you have this, you know, great food source for the native fungi that come and do their thing. But by, this is also reminding me of the quote, when we intentionally and consciously, you know, take advantage of our relationship with these microbes. So like a lot of these have been installed and people didn't even really think about how the microbes were involved with it, right? It was just like, oh, you just throw these on the land and it helps, you know? It's actually because of the microbes that they're so effective.
Right.
So when we inoculate them with fungi, when we grow fungi out on these wattles before installing them, we're creating this biological filter at the same time. So as the water and the sediment moves through them, you have this beautiful web of mycelium that can capture the heavy metals, ideally, and immobilize them, as well as break down some of those organic compounds that we were speaking about.
Right. Wow. Well, we are going to take a break right now, and we will be back to talk more about post-fire remediation.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying EcoJustice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles. Stay connected by subscribing on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests, listen to extended episodes, and get connected with us on social media. Today, you're listening to Ecological Remediation, Fungi, and the Aftermath of Urban Fires with host Kerry Kim and guests Danielle Stevenson, founder and president of the Center for Applied Ecological Remediation, and Maya Elson, guest instructor at UC Santa Cruz, MS student at San Jose State University, and guide with mycopsychology experiences.
So thank you, Maya, for sharing about that, about the work that you guys are both doing on this kind of the SoCal bioremediation efforts. And very happy to learn about the biome blogs and also the resources that you gave for people to go to. We'll post those links for people. You know, I wonder what the two of you have a lot of experience with, you know, post-fire remediation. You both have been working in this field for a while. But I'm wondering what concerns might you have right now about how it's going for Palisades and Eaton Fires, and what cautionary tales might you have around people who have a rush, who are in a rush to rebuild. I mean, I actually wish that the burned lands could be left alone to regenerate in nature's own time. But we know that's not going to happen. So what would you two like to say about what are your concerns, or how do you see it going right now? Danielle, do you want to address that?
Yeah, I have so many concerns.
You're like, where do I begin?
So many concerns right now about all of this. I'm concerned about the pace of rebuilding. I'm concerned about the lack of remediation and testing available for most, you know, people that have been impacted. And, you know, there was data from a previous fire in Southern California that, you know, 6 inches of topsoil removal was not enough for a third of sites. So, you know, that's concerning.
That is the standard of what they do, is it not? It's like a standard 6 inches or...
Well, the standard, to my knowledge, is that they do 6 inches and then they retest.
Okay.
And so in this previous example in Southern California, a third of sites that were retested after 6 inches were removed needed further remediation. And so that's kind of what Maya, I think, was speaking to, where they're like, there's often residual contamination left behind, even once like remediation
has been
being like just removing the contaminated soil has occurred. I'm also really concerned about where the contaminated soil and fire debris is going.
Yeah.
I heard recently that it's being sent to landfills in the region that are not hazardous waste landfills. They're not designed to be able to contain hazardous waste. And that's really concerning.
Meaning that it's seeping those toxins into water table.
Exactly. And those communities are like, no, do not bring this toxic stuff here. And, and still that's the plan. So there's a lot of really concerning stuff. And yeah, I'm really concerned too. I've been getting I'm sure Maya too, like so many of us in this field have been getting like hundreds, thousands, I don't know, like so many requests. There's so much, there's just a lack of information and resources generally happening. So people like don't know
where to turn, right? And they don't
know where to turn.
Yeah.
And that's that's really distressing, right? I can only imagine, like, for people who have lost so much and are very scared. Yeah, that's really concerning.
Well, so, what do you feel is the best thing for people to do who are similarly concerned as you? What do you say for people in their advocacy around this? How can we, you know, promote that there be more research or there be more resources devoted to ecological remediation? Like, what are the things that you guys see are necessary to actually instill this kind of change that we know actually needs to happen at scale, but it has to happen however we can help it to happen?
Yeah, I think that we need to really examine all of the best management practices for FEMA and for the EPA. We need to not gut the EPA, first of all, because their work is literally life-saving on so many levels and absolutely essential for so many different reasons. And especially in fire recovery, I don't think people are aware of like how important they are in terms of making it so that people can rebuild and so that the properties get cleared. And so that would be my big priority. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Danielle, anything to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, I would say like to reach out to our coalition. We're organizing to be able to try to provide more guidance and resources, but also just that to really emphasize that people do have power and communities can have an impact. So yeah. Like keep, you know, speaking out.
It's a lot about the education. I mean, I think about the work that you've been doing with Native communities, Danielle, and getting them like empowered, like the workforce development strategies or programs that you've been running to help people who like in Native communities that want to actually, that already embrace ecological remediation because that is their tradition. That is their life ways, right? Is to be working just to allow nature to have its own way with life, you know, honoring that. So I wonder if you see that there will, I almost feel that in indigenous communities, they will actually be the leaders in this because they're the ones that will most readily embrace this way of remediating toxicity. And we know that, you know, in the land back movement and different things like this, that oftentimes the Native communities will be inheriting land that has been made toxic. It's given back, but it's toxic. And they then have to deal with it and deal with all the resources necessary to address the toxicity.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just really not, it's just not right. And it's not fair in any way. And there was there's a 3,000 acre sacred site just outside of LA that is just heavily polluted. And yeah, we were collaborating with the Keech Nation on, you know, bioremediation pilot with native plants and fungi. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was just canceled recently with some of these, you know, it's just par for the course. But yeah, but I'm definitely still out there and, you know, Covernal 2 and Maya, I know, trying to share skills. And so, yeah. I've been running bioremediation workforce development programs with youth, with LA high schools specifically, that are near contaminated sites. Mm-hmm. And there's been some high schools that have been impacted by the fires in Altadena and other areas that have reached out. So really the only barrier is just funding to run those programs. And otherwise, yeah, we've been running these same workforce development programs in communities impacted by pollution to really share these skills. And like, we always tie them with a pilot project so that there's an opportunity for experiential learning and like hands-on learning. And I cannot tell you like the just overwhelming response from folks in these programs, whether it is like a tribal community or a environmental justice community or a high school community where just they're like, I didn't know, like I was so overwhelmed and, you know, in despair essentially about all the pollution. All these problems, and I didn't think I could do anything. And now it's like you
feel empowered.
You learn exactly, so empowering. You see in such a short time the impact of your actions, like that, like, you know, getting involved, it just, you can make such an impact in a really short time, even though generally these processes kind of they take time, right? Like they have their own time scales, but when we lean in to support them and support the ecologies and the fungi and all that's happening, it can happen a little bit faster. And the regeneration is visible and tangible and beautiful and measured in like reductions in all these hazardous contaminants, but also in like what you see. You see a formerly pretty desolate site that maybe was a, like there was so much loss associated with it or despair, or it was like a blight, being transformed into like a space of beauty. And that's a really powerful thing. So, yeah.
Well, I think about the Taylor Yard project, you know, the rail project that you had worked upon was the brownfield site, right? Part of your research study. And you talking about after, you know, 3 months, you have what, a 50% reduction in some of the toxic contaminants that were there. And then by a year, right, it was almost undetectable. But just the fact to see butterflies, to see pollinators, to see life returning to a site, I mean, that's inspiring to anyone, I think.
Yeah, you came to the site, right? And so it
was we like, helped out.
I don't know if you remember, but like the soil was black with oil. Like you could smell the oil. It was so hard to dig. We had to rent a hammer drill to be able to dig in the soil. Yeah, it was really dull. I actually went by Taylor Yard a few days ago and, you know, we took out everything that we put in that was part of our permit and our agreement with the city who owns the site. And yeah, we took everything out and I went back the other day and it is like a native plant nursery. It is just that's what I mean. It's like when you lean in and support the regeneration, and often fungi, I think that's why I became so into fungi, you know, but they're often able to kind of kick off a cycle of regeneration because they can break down really complex stuff that's really hard to break down. Mm-hmm. And once they start breaking that down, it creates food and habitat for all these other, you know, bacteria, other fungi, plants can come in, the soil improves. And, you know, it's, yeah, so really, it was so cool to go back to the site. It's been, well, I guess it's been over a year. And yeah, just to see it just blooming with native plants and the soil was like rich. It's dark, but not with like oil, but with, you know, like life.
Yeah. The logging focused and thinning focused.
Well, we are coming to a close. I knew it was going to go really fast. There's so much to speak about, but I wonder if there's any closing words that you might have, Danielle, just to close this out, if there's anything that you would like to say about the way forward with fire remediation here.
Just an invitation to, you know, connect with us. Like, yeah, we can share the website and there's opportunities to be involved. There's opportunities for us to work together. If you have a site that's been impacted by fire, yeah, just let's connect and, you know, build this together for Southern California.
Thank you both for the incredible work you're both doing. Listeners, definitely check out the links that we will have for Maya Elson and Danielle Stevenson and engage yourself in the healing work of our times.
All right. So great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carrie, and likewise.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, Ecological Remediation, Fungi, and the Aftermath of Urban Fires on KPFK Los Angeles. Thank you to our guests, Danielle Stevenson and Maya Elson. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio, SoCal350, and Wilder Utopia. If you like what you've heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. Project of SoCal 350. The show can be found all major podcast apps and at ecojusticeradio.org. Executive producer, myself, Jack Eit, co-host Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
Please help keep independent journalism alive and KPFK Radio strong. Become a Sustainer Circle member of KPFK by pledging at any level. $10, $20, $100 per month, whatever suits you. This is Verdeen White of Earth, Wind, and Fire, encouraging you to make your tax-deductible donation today at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org.
What's going on, family? From the Bay to L.A., my name is Kat Brooks. My show, Law & Disorder, is now on KPFK.